Federal News Update, September 29, 2025. Introduction. This report provides a comprehensive analysis of the actions undertaken by the U.S. federal government since September 25, 2025. This period is characterized by a significant intensification of interbranch conflict, defined by three dominant themes: an assertive executive branch leveraging unilateral authority to drive policy, a deadlocked legislative branch facing a fiscal crisis, and a proactive judicial branch, primarily through its emergency docket, acting as the ultimate arbiter in foundational disputes over the separation of powers. This document will dissect the key actions within each branch and synthesize their interconnected impacts on domestic policy, national security, constitutional norms, and the U.S. role in the world. The Executive Ascendant: National Security, Technology, and Domestic Policy Directives. The period since September 25, 2025, has been marked by a series of decisive and far-reaching unilateral actions from the executive branch. These measures, implemented through executive orders and presidential memoranda, demonstrate a clear strategy of utilizing the full scope of presidential power to advance a transformative policy agenda, particularly in areas where legislative consensus is absent. The administration's actions have focused on three core domains: the regulation of foreign technology platforms, the redefinition and targeting of domestic security threats, and the use of executive authority to influence immigration and economic policy. Each action, while distinct, contributes to a broader pattern of consolidating executive control and bypassing traditional legislative and administrative processes. The following table provides a high-level summary of the most significant of these actions, which are analyzed in detail in the subsequent sections. The TikTok Resolution, a new model for tech diplomacy and corporate governance. On September 25, 2025, President Donald Trump signed the Saving TikTok While Protecting National Security Executive Order, a landmark action that averted a nationwide ban of the immensely popular social media application. The order certifies a complex framework agreement as a qualified divestiture, a legal requirement under the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. This legislation, passed by Congress in 2024, mandated that TikTok's Chinese parent company, ByteDance, sell its U.S. assets or face a complete prohibition within the United States due to national security concerns. The president's order represents the culmination of months of high-stakes negotiations and establishes a novel and controversial structure for the ownership and governance of a major foreign technology platform operating in the U.S. The core of the deal involves the creation of a new U.S.-based joint venture to operate TikTok's American business. Under the approved framework, a consortium of American investors led by the software giant Oracle and the private equity firm Silver Lake will acquire a majority ownership stake, reported to be between 65% and 80%. 6. ByteDance will retain a minority stake of less than 20%, the maximum allowed under the law for a foreign adversary-controlled entity. 6. The consortium also includes foreign investors, notably the Abu Dhabi-based fund MGX, which will reportedly take a 15% stake. 10. Governance of the new entity is designed to be firmly in American hands, with a 7-member board of directors composed of 6 Americans with expertise in cybersecurity and national security. ByteDance will be permitted to appoint one representative to the board, but will be explicitly excluded from any security-related matters or committees. 6. Two of the most sensitive components of the deal are the handling of U.S. user data and the app's powerful recommendation algorithm. The agreement mandates that all U.S. user data be stored within Oracle's domestic cloud infrastructure, with strict prohibitions preventing access by ByteDance or Chinese government officials. 6. In a crucial and technically complex arrangement, the new U.S. venture will license a copy of ByteDance's algorithm. This licensed algorithm will be retrained using only U.S. data and will be subject to continuous monitoring and auditing by U.S. security partners, a measure intended to neutralize the risk of foreign influence or manipulation. 7. The executive order provides a 120-day reprieve for the negotiating parties to finalize the intricate details of this transaction. 6. A particularly contentious aspect of the deal is the valuation of the new entity, S Company, which Vice President J.D. Vance stated would be approximately $14 billion. 6. This figure has drawn sharp criticism from financial analysts, as it is not only a fraction of ByteDance's global valuation, but is also less than the $16 billion in revenue the app generated in the U.S. alone in 2023. 6. The implications of this resolution are multifaceted and profound. Geopolitically, it marks a significant de-escalation in a flashpoint of the U.S.-China technology rivalry. China's government, which had previously condemned the forced sale as robbery, appears to have acquiesced as part of a broader strategic calculation to ease trade tensions. 8. The deal is being interpreted as an act of tech diplomacy, in which China has used TikTok as a valuable bargaining chip to gain leverage in other areas of negotiation, such as tariffs and export controls on critical technologies like AI chips. 12. Economically, the agreement creates a formidable new U.S.-based social media powerhouse with a captive audience of 180 million American users. 6. However, the strikingly low valuation, combined with reports of a complex profit-sharing structure and licensing fees payable to ByteDance, suggests that the Chinese parent company may retain a substantial financial interest, potentially securing 50% or more of the U.S. operation's profits. 14. This has fueled accusations that the transaction is a sweetheart deal designed to benefit political allies of the president, such as Oracle's co-founder Larry Ellison, who is a prominent supporter. 10. Politically, the deal is a clear victory for the administration, which avoids banning an application that the president has personally credited with helping him win the 2024 election by reaching young voters. 6. However, the president's own remarks during the signing ceremony, where he joked that he would make the app 100% MAGA-related if he could, have ignited serious concerns about the potential for the new politically connected ownership to influence content moderation and algorithmically shape public discourse. 6. This has transformed the debate from one of foreign influence to one of domestic political influence. The deal structure has already triggered intense scrutiny from Congress. Representative John Molinar, the Republican chairman of the House Select Committee on China, has demanded an urgent briefing from the administration. He emphasized that the law requires not only a divestiture of control, but also the severing of any operational relationship with ByteDance, a standard that may be violated by the ongoing algorithm licensing and board representation. 10. This congressional oversight will be a critical factor in determining the final shape and long-term viability of the agreement. The TikTok executive order and the domestic terrorism memorandum, issued on the same day, appear to be unrelated policy actions. However, a deeper analysis reveals they are two applications of a single, powerful governing principle, the instrumental use of national security as a broad and flexible justification for executive actions that achieve specific political and economic objectives. One action resolves a national security threat to protect a politically valuable asset, while the other constructs a new national security threat to target political adversaries. The congressionally mandated ban on TikTok presented the administration with a dilemma: how to comply with a law grounded in national security while preserving a platform the president found politically useful. 6. The solution was an executive order that declared the national security threat resolved through a complex corporate restructuring, an action that primarily serves the political goal of keeping the app online and the economic goal of transferring a valuable asset to friendly hands. Simultaneously, the administration faced domestic political opposition. To counter this, it issued a presidential memorandum that framed this opposition as a grave national security threat under the banner of domestic terrorism. 4. The justification is again national security, but the clear outcome is the mobilization of the federal law enforcement and intelligence apparatus against political opponents. The juxtaposition of these two actions reveals that national security is not being applied as a consistent objective principle, but as a discretionary instrument of executive power. It can be invoked to save an entity from sanction or to subject one to it, depending entirely on the political calculus of the moment. A new front in domestic policy, the crackdown on organized political violence. Concurrent with the resolution of the TikTok issue, the administration opened a new and highly contentious front in domestic policy. On September 25, 2025, President Trump signed National Security Presidential Memorandum titled Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence. 3. This sweeping directive establishes a whole-of-government strategy to investigate and dismantle what the administration describes as a sophisticated, well-funded, and organized campaign of left-wing terrorism. 17. The memorandum serves as the operational blueprint for implementing the president's September 22nd executive order that designated Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, providing the framework to mobilize the national security apparatus against a vaguely defined domestic political movement. The memorandum's key directives represent a significant expansion of federal law enforcement powers aimed at domestic groups. It designates the FBI's National Joint Terrorism Task Force as the lead coordinating body for a national strategy involving the Departments of Justice, Treasury, and Homeland Security, as well as the Internal Revenue Service. 4. The scope of investigation is exceptionally broad, directing law enforcement to pursue not just individuals who commit violent acts, but all participants in what are termed criminal and terroristic conspiracies. This explicitly includes the organized structures, networks, entities, organizations, funding sources, and predicate actions behind them. During the signing ceremony, the president gave this abstract directive concrete targets, publicly naming billionaire philanthropists and prominent Democratic donors George Soros and Reid Hoffman as individuals who could be investigated for funding these networks. 18. A central pillar of the new strategy is financial disruption. The memorandum orders the Treasury Department, through its Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Office, to deploy its powerful investigative tools to identify and disrupt financial networks that fund domestic terrorism and political violence. 4. It further instructs the IRS to take action to ensure that tax-exempt entities are not directly or indirectly financing such activities, and to refer violators to the Department of Justice for potential prosecution. Furthermore, the memorandum dramatically broadens the definition of what constitutes domestic terrorism for the purposes of federal law enforcement priorities. It directs the Attorney General to issue guidance ensuring that domestic terrorism includes a wide range of activities, such as organized doxing campaigns, swatting, rioting, looting, trespass, assault, destruction of property. 4. This conflates various existing criminal offenses and, in some cases, activities that may be protected speech with the highly charged and legally potent label of terrorism. The memorandum's impact and implications have been met with immediate and forceful condemnation from civil liberties organizations and legal experts. The directive raises profound First Amendment questions regarding the rights to freedom of speech, assembly, and association. The American Civil Liberties Union described the action as a shameful and dangerous move that abuses the false and stigmatizing label of domestic terrorism to intimidate and investigate the president's critics. 23. While legal scholars have noted that the memorandum does not create new criminal statutes, its primary effect is to direct the vast and powerful tools of the national security state, originally designed to combat foreign terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda, against domestic political activity. This redirection of resources and focus is seen as a deliberate attempt to chill dissent and political opposition. 18. This action represents a significant escalation in the politicization of federal law enforcement. The memorandum's text and the accompanying fact sheet focus exclusively on ideologies it describes as anti-American, anti-capitalism, and anti-Christianity, and movements operating under the umbrella of anti-fascism. 4. This one-sided focus is further underscored by the recent removal from the Department of Justice website of a research paper which concluded that right-wing extremists have been responsible for the vast majority of deadly domestic terrorist attacks in recent decades, signaling a deliberate and politically motivated shift in the administration's counterterrorism priorities. For nonprofit organizations, particularly foundations and advocacy groups that support progressive causes, the memorandum creates a new and perilous operational environment. They now face the credible risk of heightened scrutiny, including IRS audits of their tax-exempt status, Treasury Department investigations into their funding streams, and potential designation as domestic terrorist organizations, a designation for which there is no existing statutory legal framework in U.S. law, making it a purely executive creation with uncertain but menacing legal consequences. 21. The legislative impasse, fiscal deadlines, and partisan warfare. While the executive branch has pursued an aggressive and unilateral policy agenda, the U.S. Congress has been defined by its inability to perform its most fundamental constitutional duty, funding the government. The period since September 25, 2025, has been dominated by a high-stakes standoff over a continuing resolution to prevent a government shutdown at the end of the fiscal year on September 30. This legislative paralysis is not merely a procedural dispute over budget numbers. It is a manifestation of the deep ideological chasm between the two parties and serves as a proxy battle for broader conflicts with the executive branch over healthcare policy and the constitutional separation of powers. Countdown to shutdown, the battle over the continuing resolution. The central conflict consuming Congress is the deadlock over passing a temporary spending bill to keep the federal government operational. 27. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives passed a CR, designated H.R. 5371, on September 19. However, the measure was swiftly rejected by the Senate on the same day in a 44-48 vote, falling well short of the 60 votes needed for passage and signaling the depth of the partisan divide. 29. The failure of this initial effort has left Congress with only days to find a compromise before funding expires. The two parties have put forth starkly different proposals, with the disagreements centered on policy riders rather than spending levels. The Republican position, embodied in H.R. 5371, is to pass a clean CR that would simply extend current government funding levels through November 21, 2025. GOP leaders argue this approach is the most responsible, as it would avert a shutdown and provide additional time for bipartisan negotiations on the 12 full-year appropriations bills without being encumbered by controversial policy issues. 27. Democrats, in contrast, have refused to provide the necessary votes for a clean CR, leveraging the must-pass nature of the bill to demand the inclusion of key policy priorities. Their primary demands are centered on healthcare, specifically a permanent extension of Affordable Care Act insurance subsidies that are set to expire and the reversal of cuts to Medicaid that were enacted in previous Republican-led legislation, 27. In a direct response to the president's recent actions, Democrats are also insisting on the inclusion of legislative language that would restrict the executive branch's ability to unilaterally impound or rescind funds appropriated by Congress, a measure aimed at preventing a repeat of the foreign aid freeze. 27. As the deadline has approached, political maneuvering has intensified. In a hardball tactic designed to increase pressure on the Senate, Republican leadership in the House announced the cancellation of scheduled legislative sessions for September 29 and 30. This move effectively leaves the Senate with a take-it-or-leave-it choice on the previously passed House bill, removing the possibility of amending it and sending it back to the House for another vote before the deadline. 32. The White House has amplified this pressure, publicly and repeatedly blaming Democrats for the impending shutdown. 33. More alarmingly, the administration has taken the unprecedented step of directing federal agencies to prepare for mass firings, formally known as reductions in force, of federal employees rather than the customary temporary furloughs. This directive explicitly targets programs and personnel in agencies not aligned with the president's policy priorities, transforming a potential shutdown from a temporary disruption into a tool for permanently reshaping the federal government. 35. Amid this escalating crisis, a last-ditch effort at negotiation has been scheduled, with the president agreeing to meet with the top four congressional leaders on Monday, September 29, though expectations for a breakthrough remain exceedingly low. 38. The administration's threat to implement mass firings rather than temporary furloughs represents a strategic and norm-breaking escalation in the history of government shutdowns. Historically, fiscal standoffs have resulted in the temporary furlough of non-essential federal employees, with the implicit and often explicit promise that they will return to their jobs and receive back pay once a funding agreement is reached. 27. This practice has contained the long-term damage of shutdowns, keeping the political focus on the immediate budgetary dispute. The new directive from the White House Office of Management and Budget for agencies to prepare reduction in force plans shatters this norm. 41. A RIF is not a temporary leave. It is a permanent termination of employment and the elimination of the associated position. By explicitly targeting programs not consistent with the president's priorities, the administration is linking the shutdown directly to the broader ideological goals of shrinking the administrative state, as articulated in policy blueprints like Project 2025. This tactic fundamentally alters the stakes of the negotiation. For Democrats, the risk is no longer a temporary and politically damaging disruption of government services, but the permanent dismantling of federal programs and the firing of the civil servants who run them. For the administration, a shutdown is transformed from a point of leverage in a negotiation into a direct opportunity to achieve long-standing policy objectives that it cannot accomplish through the legislative process. This turns a budget impasse into an existential threat for targeted segments of the federal government. The legislative agenda, messaging over mandates. Beyond the all-consuming battle over the CR, the broader legislative activity in Congress has been more symbolic than substantive. The list of the most viewed bills on Congress.gov is dominated by legislation that serves as political messaging vehicles rather than viable policy proposals. This includes competing resolutions to honor the life of the recently assassinated conservative activist Charlie Kirk, a resolution to impeach President Trump, and a host of partisan bills related to Russian sanctions, immigration, and other divisive issues. 44. This focus on messaging highlights the deep polarization that prevents cooperation on more fundamental governing tasks. In a stark illustration of this dynamic, on Friday, September 26, the House introduced a flurry of 53 new public bills and 10 resolutions, 45. This burst of legislative activity covered a vast and disparate range of topics, from the reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program and enhanced whistleblower protections, to a bill promoting classical architecture for federal buildings, and a highly controversial measure to prohibit certain gender-related medical treatments for minors, 46. The sheer volume and diversity of these new bills, introduced just days before a potential government shutdown, contrasts sharply with the complete lack of progress on the one piece of legislation essential to the continued functioning of the U.S. government. However, a few outliers demonstrate that bipartisan cooperation is not entirely impossible. A notable example is the legislative push to extend telehealth flexibilities that were first granted during the COVID-19 pandemic and are scheduled to expire on September 30. The Telehealth Modernization Act, which has strong bipartisan sponsorship in both the House and Senate, has garnered widespread support from influential outside groups like the American Medical Association, 47. The progress on this issue suggests that when faced with a hard, non-negotiable deadline and a broad consensus on the policy's merits, Congress can still function. Unfortunately, this stands as a rare exception to the prevailing rule of gridlock and partisan warfare that has brought the federal government to the brink of a shutdown. The current state of legislative deadlock is creating a dangerous feedback loop that systematically strengthens executive power at the expense of Congress. By failing to perform its core constitutional functions, such as passing appropriations and substantive legislation, Congress creates policy vacuums and governance crises. The executive branch then feels empowered and is often publicly pressured to fill these vacuums with unilateral action. These executive actions are subsequently challenged in court, where the judiciary, particularly in recent years, has shown a tendency to defer to executive authority. The impending shutdown is the quintessential example of this dynamic. The legislative failure to fund the government creates a crisis. 27. The executive branch frames this crisis as the fault of its political opponents and then proposes a radical unilateral solution, mass firings, positioning the president as the only decisive actor, 41. In a parallel instance, Congress appropriated funds for foreign aid, but the executive refused to spend them, 48. When this interbranch conflict reached the Supreme Court, the judiciary sided with the executive's discretion. This pattern demonstrates that legislative inaction does not result in a static government. It results in an active transfer of power to the other branches. The gridlock in Congress is therefore not merely a symptom of political polarization, but a direct and accelerating cause of the growing imbalance of power within the American system of government. The judiciary as arbiter. The Supreme Court's emergency docket takes center stage. In the midst of executive assertiveness and legislative paralysis, the judicial branch has emerged as the most decisive and consequential actor in the federal system. Through a series of rapid and powerful rulings on its emergency or shadow docket, the U.S. Supreme Court has intervened directly in the most heated conflicts between the other branches. These decisions, made with limited briefing and no oral argument, are not merely procedural. They are shaping the fundamental boundaries of federal power and carry profound, and in some cases permanent, implications for the constitutional separation of powers and the future of the administrative state. Upholding executive discretion. The foreign aid ruling on September 26, 2025, the Supreme Court issued a pivotal emergency order in the case concerning the administration's freeze on foreign aid. The court's action allows the Trump administration to continue withholding over $4 billion in funds that were duly appropriated by Congress for the fiscal year ending on September 30th. 49, this ruling effectively sanctions, at least for the time being, the president's defiance of Congress's constitutional power of the purse. The legal dispute arose from the administration's use of a controversial and rarely used budgetary tactic known as a pocket rescission. The White House submitted a formal request to Congress to rescind the foreign aid funds so late in the fiscal year that the statutory 45-day period for congressional review would extend beyond the September 30th expiration date of the funds. The administration argued that congressional inaction during this window effectively canceled the appropriation, a theory that legal experts and the Government Accountability Office have disputed. 55, a federal district court judge agreed with the challengers, finding the president's action likely illegal and issuing a preliminary injunction that ordered the administration to obligate the funds as Congress intended. The Supreme Court's conservative majority, in a brief and unsigned order, lifted that injunction. The order stated that the asserted harms to the executive's conduct of foreign affairs appear to outweigh the potential harm faced by the aid organizations and their beneficiaries. 55. While the court noted that its order was not a final determination on the merits of the case, the practical effect of the ruling is final. With the funds set to expire in a matter of days, the court's intervention ensures that the $4 billion will almost certainly go unspent. 50. Justice Alina Kagan, joined by Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson, authored a forceful dissent. She argued that the majority's decision on the emergency docket undermines the fundamental constitutional principle of the separation of powers, specifically Congress's exclusive authority over federal spending. Justice Kagan wrote that the practical effect of the stay is to prevent the funds from reaching their intended recipients, not just now, but for all time. The implications of this ruling are vast. It significantly strengthens the president's position in any future budgetary disputes with Congress, providing a judicial green light for the executive branch to ignore congressional spending directives through procedural maneuvers. The decision could embolden the administration to expand its use of impoundment and rescission tactics to other areas of the federal government where it has policy disagreements with the legislature, representing a major blow to congressional authority and its oversight capabilities. 48. Redefining independence, the challenge to the administrative state. Beyond the immediate fiscal conflict, the Supreme Court is actively entertaining cases that strike at the very heart of the modern American administrative state, the principle of independent federal agencies. On September 22nd, in the case of Trump v. Slaughter, the court took two significant actions on its emergency docket. First, it granted a stay that allows the president's removal of Federal Trade Commission Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter to remain in effect. Second, and more consequentially, the court granted a petition for certiorari before judgment, agreeing to hear the merits of the case on an expedited basis in December 2025. The central question the court has agreed to decide is whether the 1935 landmark precedent Humphrey's Executor v. United States should be overruled. 51. The legal precedent at stake is foundational to the structure of the U.S. government. In Humphrey's Executor, the Supreme Court unanimously held that Congress has the constitutional authority to create independent agencies that perform quasi-legislative or quasi-judicial functions, such as the FTC. To protect these agencies from undue political influence, the court ruled that Congress could insulate their leaders from the president's absolute removal power, allowing them to be fired only for cause, specifically for inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance in office. The Trump administration's legal argument is that this nearly 90-year-old precedent is an unconstitutional infringement on the president's executive power under Article 2 of the Constitution, and that the president must have the authority to fire any executive branch official at will. 52. This direct challenge to agency independence is not an isolated event. A parallel legal battle is rapidly advancing toward the court in Trump v. Cook, a case concerning the president's attempt to remove Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. In this case, the administration is testing the limits of the four-cause protection itself, arguing that it has cause to fire Governor Cook based on allegations of misconduct that predated her appointment to the board. 49. The case has drawn extraordinary attention, including an amicus brief filed by 9 Harvard economists and every living former chair of the Federal Reserve, who warn that allowing the politically motivated removal of a Fed governor would shatter the central bank's independence and risk severe long-term damage to the U.S. economy. 65. The potential impact of these cases cannot be overstated. Should the Supreme Court overturn Humphrey's executor, it would trigger a constitutional earthquake. Such a ruling would effectively dismantle the concept of the independent regulatory agency as it has existed for nearly a century. It would render the leadership of bodies like the FTC, the Federal Communications Commission, the National Labor Relations Board, and potentially even the Federal Reserve directly subservient to the political will of the sitting president. 51. This would concentrate an immense amount of regulatory and economic power in the executive branch, erase decades of administrative law, and lead to unprecedented politicization of regulation, enforcement, and monetary policy. The court's decision to take up this foundational question on an expedited basis via its emergency docket signals a clear and strong interest from the court's conservative majority in fundamentally reshaping the structure and powers of the U.S. government. The Supreme Court's recent and aggressive use of its emergency docket is creating more than just a series of victories for the current administration. It is actively forging a new, de facto constitutional framework. This framework systematically expands executive power at the direct expense of the legislative branch, and it is being constructed without the traditional, deliberative process of merits-based jurisprudence. The pattern is consistent and clear. The court has allowed the executive to impound funds duly appropriated by Congress in the Foreign Aid Case 50, and it has allowed the executive to fire the heads of independent agencies in direct contravention of federal statutes in the Slaughter Case 51. These decisions are being made through the expedited and often opaque mechanism of the shadow docket, relying on emergency stays and grants of certiorari before judgment. While each ruling individually weakens a specific check on presidential power, Congress's control of the purse, its ability to design independent agencies, their collective effect is far greater. They establish a consistent pattern where the executive's most aggressive claims of authority are judicially validated. This creates a powerful signal to the executive branch that future boundary-pushing actions will likely be upheld, encouraging further assertions of unilateral power. Conversely, it signals to Congress that its core constitutional powers are vulnerable to being overridden by a combination of executive defiance and judicial acquiescence. This dynamic is not merely resolving individual disputes, it is fundamentally altering the constitutional architecture of the U.S. government in real time. Synthesis and forward outlook, interconnected crises and future implications. The events since September 25, 2025, are not isolated incidents occurring in separate governmental silos. They are deeply interconnected symptoms of a systemic constitutional stress test, where the actions of each branch create cascading consequences for the others. The assertive use of executive power, the paralysis of the legislative branch, and the decisive interventions of the judiciary have converged to create a period of significant governmental instability and transformation. Analysis of interbranch dynamics, a system in crisis. The current state of U.S. governance is defined by a feedback loop of escalating conflict. The legislative paralysis detailed in Section 2, most acutely visible in the failure to fund the government, creates a power vacuum. The executive branch, as analyzed in Section 1, has aggressively moved to fill this vacuum with unilateral actions, using national security as a flexible justification for policies ranging from corporate restructuring to the targeting of domestic political opponents. These executive actions are, in turn, challenged and ultimately arbitrated by the judiciary, as shown in Section 3. The Supreme Court, through its emergency docket, has demonstrated a strong tendency to ratify this expansion of executive authority, even when it conflicts with clear statutory language or long-standing precedent. The impending government shutdown serves as the focal point for this entire dynamic. It is a profound failure of legislative duty that the executive branch is poised to exploit not as a crisis to be managed, but as a strategic opportunity to permanently reshape the federal workforce through mass firings. This action, should it occur, will inevitably trigger a new round of intense legal battles, placing the judiciary once again in the position of arbiter in a foundational dispute over the powers of the president versus the will of Congress. Key implications for governance and policy. The convergence of these trends has several critical implications for the future of American governance. Erosion of congressional power. Congress's core constitutional authorities to legislate, to appropriate funds, and to structure the government are being systematically weakened. Executive defiance, such as the impoundment of foreign aid, and judicial rulings that sanction this defiance, are striking at the heart of the legislative branch's power of the purse and its oversight capabilities. The rise of a unitary executive. The combination of the Domestic Terrorism Directive, which mobilizes the national security apparatus for domestic political ends, and the direct legal challenges to agency independence points toward an increasingly powerful, centralized executive branch. This trend diminishes the checks and balances designed to prevent the concentration of power and increases the president's ability to direct the entire administrative state toward political objectives. Politicization of national security and law enforcement. The instrumental use of national security justifications for what are clearly political and economic aims risks a dangerous erosion of public trust in these critical government functions. It creates a precedent for using the most powerful tools of the state against citizens based on their political beliefs, raising severe and long-term civil liberties concerns. Economic and market instability. The high probability of a government shutdown, coupled with the unprecedented legal challenge to the independence of the Federal Reserve, introduces significant uncertainty and risk into the U.S. and global economies. The potential for politically motivated monetary policy and the disruption of federal services creates an unstable environment for businesses, investors, and the public. Strategic recommendations and watchpoints. For stakeholders navigating this volatile environment, several key events in the coming days and months will be critical to monitor. Immediate watchpoint. The outcome of the government funding negotiations is the most immediate and potentially disruptive event. Whether a last-minute deal is reached or a shutdown occurs will set the tone for interbranch relations for the remainder of the year. If a shutdown happens, the administration's subsequent actions regarding federal employees, whether it follows through on the threat of mass firings, will be a crucial indicator of its long-term strategy. Judicial watchpoint. The oral arguments and eventual ruling in Trump versus Slaughter will be of paramount importance. This decision has the potential to be the most significant separation of powers case in generations, with the capacity to fundamentally remake the administrative state. The court's decision in the pending emergency application in Trump versus Cook will serve as a key early indicator of its direction. Executive watchpoint. The practical implementation of the Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence Memorandum must be closely watched. specific investigative actions by the JTTF, financial scrutiny by the Treasury Department, and audits by the IRS against nonprofit organizations will be the true test of the memorandum's real-world impact on civil liberties and political dissent. Geopolitical watchpoint. The finalization and implementation of the TikTok deal will be a critical watchpoint. The degree of scrutiny from Congress, the final details of the profit-sharing and algorithm licensing agreements, and the official reaction from Beijing will determine the long-term viability and implications of this new model of tech sector regulation and its role in U.S.-China relations. We're excited.